off myself, Paddy, by asking you whether it's true. I was a bit taken aback that you should say this, that what George Monbiot, he's not a socialist in our terms, I know, but you said he's advocating Soviet-style state capitalism. Is that actually true?
Sorry, I think you might have misheard, or maybe I mispronounced it. No, he's not proposing an alternative because he believes that the only alternative is Soviet state capitalism, which he obviously doesn't want. So he's a bit he's in a bit of a no man's land. He doesn't know what to think. He
Can I
knows.
be heard?
I'm sorry.
Hello?
That was me being stupid. I've muted myself.
Right.
Schoolboy error. Sorry, I think I'm either. Yeah, that's not what I meant at all. I probably expressed myself badly. No. He certainly doesn't support Soviet state capitalism. Far from it. That's the worst possible thing. But his understanding is that the only alternative to capitalism is Soviet state cap is Soviet, communism or whatever you call it. So he doesn't have an answer. He knows that capitalism is the problem, but he doesn't like the solution because of what he thinks it is. And we haven't managed to, nobody else has managed to get through to him that that isn't the only alternative.
Okay, thanks, Paddy. Jane and Tony have put in the speaking queue a link to an article in the Independent entitled "Current Banning of Anti-Capitalism in Schools." Maybe that itself is a sign that somebody's running scared somewhere. The fact that a lot of people are declaring themselves anti-capitalist.
Yeah, this was well, they changed the legislation, didn't they, the Tories, a year or so back. I can't remember the exact wording of it, but yeah, they banned a whole load of teaching of various different things. They associated anti-capitalism with terrorism, with anti-democracy, anti-democratic ideas. Yeah, it's just a load of a complete load of rubbish. But surprisingly, there's been very little protest about it. I don't know if that's because British people are just too apathetic or whether they're just too depressed.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder whether it's actually happening in practice. That's the thing. Sorry, there's a message from Jane and Tony who say they can't hear anything.
Right.
They don't appear to be. Oh, they're back again now. Can you hear us, Jane and Tony? Hopefully you can.
Yeah, I think
Okay.
they wandered off into some other channel by
I can
accident.
hear you now. Yeah, I've got back now.
Yeah,
Okay.
okay.
Okay, thanks. Right, okay. A question now from Steve Finch.
No, it's just a contribution actually about this thing relating to the Department for Education, so-called. It's actually an instruction from the department. I don't think it's a law. It's an instruction from the department to schools not to allow materials from revolutionary organisations into the classroom. I was speaking to some school students at Wigan recently, and their teachers have had to remove from the class materials Spartacist materials, Spartacist pamphlets from 1918. They are studying the situation in Germany, but they're not allowed to read Spartacist magazines as part of their education, which is absolutely astounding. So yeah, that's just, so it is having an effect in schools, I would. So having to change the learning resources.
Okay, Steve, thanks. That's interesting. Right, Mike Foster now.
Hello there. Yeah, thanks, Paddy. Yeah, really enjoyed that. Yeah, it was really thought-provoking, and yeah, I think you're spot on. And like with your other talks, you've hit on something you know, that's there and seems sort of obvious when you explain it, but we weren't really aware of it beforehand. So yeah, thanks. Yeah. Anyway, my point was that I think with a lot of leftist enthusiasm, it's one thing to bear in mind is that, of course, in the past, a lot of the left was aligned around, you know, trade unions and the Labour Party. Of course, that had a recent resurgence with Corbyn. But at the moment, of course, with the left doesn't seem to have the same kind of sort of focus or organisation in the same sort of structure that it used to. I mean, it might bounce back. There might be another Occupy movement or Left Unity or something to coalesce the left. But at the moment, it doesn't really have much to knit it together apart from the Green movement. And of course, in other aspects, the left is quite fractured. All of the identity politics has sort of stirred up a lot of ill temper among the left. And of course, the left is sort of a lot of the ideas are bounced around on social media. I suppose that, if anything, is where the movement is at the moment. So yeah, Paddy, I was just wondering what you thought about how sort of leftist ideas and you know, sort of socialism, however defined, being more popular. To what extent is the sort of the mechanism part of the message? You know, do you sort of mean how what knits it together? And it seems to be sort of social media rather than old traditional leftist structures. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, interesting questions, Mike. I mean, you're right, actually. That, well, I agree with you anyway. That the left, in broad terms, has got no structure anymore. And I suspect it's because it's a bit bankrupt. I mean, a lot of it was sort of bankrupted by the Berlin Wall. So, you know, they couldn't, you know, they couldn't. I mean, some of them still do peddle this kind of, you know, sort of vanguardist Leninist stuff. But, the Berlin Wall really sort of discredited all that. And since then, where, you know, what have we seen? We saw this kind of amorphous anti-capitalist movement, which really only went on for about 5 years in the early noughties. But it was such a broad church, it just had nothing holding it together, really. And then about 10 years ago, I think it was, we saw Occupy. But really that whole kind of message coalesced, although it did mainstream the idea of the 1% and the 99%. So I think that was a really good thing that it did. But it sort of mainstreamed, it coalesced around the idea of banks, you know, dodgy banks and dodgy corporate tax dodgers and all this sort of thing. And kind of, I think, kind of derailed the sort of left discourse into, you know, how you know, the rich corporations ought to pay more tax, which is about as far away from socialist ideas as it's possible to get. And I think, and also, it's not very sexy to talk about tax all the time. You know, young people don't, you know, it doesn't sound very revolutionary to young people, because it bloody well isn't revolutionary. It's a load of crap, you know, to talk about, oh, Google doesn't pay enough tax. Who cares, you know? I think the left's in a terrible place at the moment. It's run out of ideas. And but the question is the medium the message, I suppose you're saying as well. And I think, you know, we've stuck at being parliamentary socialists, even though it's made us pretty unpopular in certain quarters, even sort of people who otherwise would agree with us kind of raise their eyebrows at the whole parliamentary thing, go, what, really? Really? You know, knowing what a bunch of bastards parliaments always are. You know, but it is, I suppose you could say, it's our unique selling proposition, or it's certainly something that makes us fairly distinct amongst what I would call, well, what I tend to call anarcho-libertarian, you know, socialist, something of that sort. It is an unusual position, but it's also one that it hasn't ever done. So I've always been, you know, very sceptical about our, not about the parliamentary idea per se, but us standing in expensive elections and getting, you know, sort of 90 votes or something. But there are other reasons to do that. I think there are practical reasons why that probably does need to carry on being done. But it is something that makes us, does kind of mark us out. You know, I think there's a lot of truth in the old saying that if people won't vote for socialism, certainly not going to fight for it. So I don't really have an answer to you overall. I'm just waffling here, Mike, sorry. But I do think you made a good point. The left is in a bit of a, yeah, it's in a bit of a void at the moment. So if it's going to get, I mean, I saw a, there was a video made by the Marxist humanists. You know, the guy, Andrew Kleiman, I think he's one of them. And they had one of their talks was about the fact that what they find alarming is that the biggest growth area in the American left is Stalinism. Very strangely, that people aren't sort of going over to sort of, you know, cuddly libertarian ideas. They're going straight for the tankies. Is this a sort of young testosterone thing, I wonder? They weren't sure, but they certainly found it alarming. So, well, you know, it does seem to me there's a trend, but whether it'll go in our direction or not sort of remains to be seen. And it also depends, I suppose, it depends on what we do as well. Enough waffle for me.
Thanks, Paddy. There are no questions in the queue at the moment. And given that there aren't, can I sort of draw?
Steve Finch is back.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, you're there again, Steve. Okay, go on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we should give the impression that we give a monkeys about what the left's problems are, because we don't. There's a really useful example of this that Howard brought to our attention a couple of weeks ago. This thing called System Change, Not Climate Change, which is an American organization that call themselves eco-socialist. And they start off with an absolutely wonderful analysis of the ills of capitalism and the threat that it causes to us, existential threats and economic threats and all that. And then, of course, they say, we need people's banks and we need fair wages and all the general shite that has been put forward by the by people ever since about 1870 in the working class, instead of getting to grips with socialist ideas and the proper revolutionary alternative. I'm not quite as enthusiastic as you about this idea of people calling themselves democratic socialists in America, because really all they're talking about is Bernie Sanders. I mean, the only comment that I'd make at the moment about the left in Britain is, of course, that the Tory party have shown up what a load of nonsense this idea of nationalisation is. They've now nationalised parts, renationalised parts of British Rail, or what used to be British Rail, excuse me, for the younger audience. And they're also subsidising, for example, industries like that bunch of the chemicals industry that was unable to economically produce CO2 for the food industry. So you have got an interventionist Tory government doing exactly what the idiots on the left of the Labour Party are telling people is socialism. And that depresses me. But there you go. Okay, that's my bit.
Just to just come back on that bit, Steve. I mean, I don't take the same view as you. I think that we function better in a political ecosystem where the left are doing better than the right. So it actually does matter to us what is broadly going on with the left. That's my view. But other people may disagree. I don't think we can just completely cut ourselves off from what's going on around us.
Thanks, Steve. Paddy.
Can I just come back to that?
Okay.
I mean, yeah, that would be fine what you're saying, Paddy, except that the other week we were at this the demonstration against the Tory party conference in Manchester, and talking to the radicals and picking up the newspapers from the radicals, they're just coming the same nonsense all the time. This is socialism, it's state capitalism. They keep coming the same ideas. This is what socialism is, they say. State capitalism. And by the way, what we ought to do is we have to concentrate on where the working class is at the moment. In other words, we have to argue for fair wages, we have to argue for low rents, and so on and so forth, because that way we will attract working class support. They're just confusing people. So, yeah, okay. So, as you said, we've got different views on that.
Well, yeah, but, you know, better a badly informed debate than no debate at all, which is what the Tories are trying to impose. I mean, you know, as we saw with this advice to schools, they would really like to shut the left down completely and prevent all debate. You know, I'd rather have a debate where maybe people are confused, but at least there is a debate and we can actually get in there and go, look, you know this isn't going to work. These ideas of yours don't work. And where we're seeing a lot of that is in climate activism at the moment. I mean, look at the sort of demands that, Extinction Rebellion are making. I mean, absolutely preposterous demands. And, we need to be there saying, look, you know, this is ridiculous. You have to be realistic. Capitalism is not going to deliver these things, not in any manner or means. And, we need to be in there in those debates. But, you know, my feeling is that the Tories would just like to kind of, prevent the debates. And certainly right-wing think tanks would like to prevent the debates.
Thanks, Paddy. Jane or Tony now? You're muted at the moment, Jane or Tony. Are you able to unmute yourselves?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, thanks. Right, go on, go ahead.
Sorry about that. So this was a question. I mean, I remember Paddy talking about how the SPGB in the 80s, and my impression was it was bigger then, and I was thinking, well, the left was bigger in the early 80s as well. I mean, there are a lot of, well, and in the 70s, I guess, there are a lot of more out on... There was more support for out-on-the-limb groups, and there were lots of kind of lefty community groups and stuff like that that subsequently all died. And I wondered if the SPGB had had an upsurge at that time. I mean, the question is obviously around Paddy's thing, does it help to have a sort of mood of interesting left ideas out there, or does it not make any difference because they're the wrong ideas anyway? Yeah, that was a question. Sorry, it went on a bit.
Well, my take on that is that as I remember it, I mean, yeah, I suppose we were bigger back then, but it wasn't so much that we were even bigger, it's just that we were more visible. I think all the parties were more visible because you had outdoor meetings back in you had public meetings in the 80s. We did actually have some outdoor meetings as well, but generally you had public meetings. People went to these things. In my town, we used to go postering for all our public meetings and risking getting arrested and covering ourselves with, you know, sort of paste and gunge. And doing all this thing, running when the coppers turned up and that sort of thing. And that's how everybody used to advertise. And, you know, there were posters all over town for, you know, political meetings, also music gigs and things like that. And our council closed all that down by threatening to fine any pub £400 a day if anybody fly posted for a meeting in that pub, plus £100 for every day that the poster was up. So, of course, that put the fear of God into the pubs, and they refused to have any public meetings after that. And as far as I can make out, most of the councils around the country did the same thing. So they basically shut down debate amongst the left, and they shut down our ability to be visible. So that was a very sort of repressive move by councils, all in the name of cleaning up the environment and making it look pretty, you know, and all this sort of thing. But they didn't even provide any sort of public, you know, poster sites where you were allowed to put them up. In my town, there was just one outside the market for everybody to use, which was impossible. So, and they soon got rid of that as well. So they just don't care about, the public's right to free speech or anything like that. You can say what you like, but you're not allowed to advertise a meeting where you're going to say it. So I think that's the biggest change in my impression from the 80s is the visibility thing. I don't know if anybody else has got any views on that.
Any comments? Well, if there aren't, can I just briefly say that I don't think there's any doubt that historically, when the left does better, the party does better. The party is taken more notice of and there's more interest in it when a Labour government's in power. Reason being that a Labour government inevitably doesn't deliver. People don't get what they thought they were going to get from Labour, and they look elsewhere. And one of the places some of them look is us. Others look out, not to us, but to other organisations, etc. We do less well when there's what you might call a right winger or a Tory government in power, because people think that as long as they can get the Tories out and another party in, usually the Labour Party, then things are going to get at least a bit better. The reformist urge sort of kicks in. Okay, Matthew, you're in line next. Carry on.
I think sort of linking on to what you were saying about visibility and how that obviously affects it majorly. There's certainly from what I've just seen in my age group, there are a lot of people who would probably be very interested in joining these parties and going for change. But the thing is, nobody knows things like this exist, and nobody even knows about the ideology at all. So many people probably would very much join this and get involved, but then obviously they don't know about it. They don't join, and that means nobody else knows about it, as nobody else was speaking up and making it public in the first place.
Well, you're right, of course, and it's been pointed out before by other members that the main thing keeping us small is the very fact that we're small. You know, we just don't seem to be able to hit that critical mass. It is a perpetual problem. But I mean, we do have, we have things like social media now that we didn't have in the 80s. You know, we have, we have a website, we have ways of, we have Twitter, we have Facebook, we've all those things. So we are still, getting the message out to some people, but it's a pitifully few people. I think we'd all agree. Nothing like the sort of volume that we need. It's an open question. It is one of the oldest questions in the socialist party. How can we kind of generate more interest? But I definitely think that it's been disastrous for us, not just for us, but for radical groups everywhere, that you can't advertise meetings. I went and complained to my local council about this at the time and said, you've got council message notice boards all over town, on all the lampposts. Every time you've got a council-run event that you want to make money out of, you've got posters all over town. We don't even have one We don't even have one poster site. None of us, none of the population of this town has any way of advertising a meeting apart from you people. They said, what's wrong with the internet? In other words, we just had to use the internet, whereas they got all the poster sites all over town for their own events. Talk about, hypocritical. Just terrible, but there we are. That's what it is. There just hasn't been any sort of local, any protest about it.
Steve?
Yeah, just, you'll have to excuse us, Matthew, because Paddy just mentioned these old people's social media fora, and he forgot that young people don't use those anymore. So the issue is, we need people
that are that understand the social media that young people are using at the moment to help us get the case across. So so keep in touch with us about that, will you? Okay.
Yeah, I might try, but not sure how well I do.
I think plenty of people still use Twitter and Facebook. I don't think we need to, you know, if we were getting huge numbers of people on those, we'd be doing all right. So, you know, I don't think we need to sort of worry too much about Instagram and TikTok just at the moment.
Might work.
Well, if you know anything about Instagram or TikTok, Matthew.
Oh, I don't use those anyway.
Ah, there we go. There we go. And by the way, Steve, I think young people probably don't say fora either. So there.
Touché.
Yeah. I think it's quite possible that young people don't even understand the word fora. Anyway, anybody else like to put a question in the queue? We're surely not going to finish this early, are we, this evening? Well, again, you know, we've got Janet now. Hi, Janet. Do speak.
It's not really a question. It's just a remarks. It's about this division between the left and the right, and should we be encouraged by an increase in the left? And I feel we should, because I think that people who are have a kindness and a humanity towards generally their fellow members of the human race will gravitate towards the left rather than the right. That's just a generalisation. Obviously, there's a lot of differences. I have a lot of spare time, and I spend some of it watching the debates going on in the House of Commons. And there is a clear division between the Conservatives and the other side, the Labour and the Lib Dems and the One Green and then the Scottish lot. There is a clear, it seems to me anyway, a clear division between their attitudes and often their backgrounds as well. There's an awful lot of women on the left who have come from probably activism or working in the council or in some sort of support group for women, and they have they're becoming quite strident, which is probably good, and on the left. So I think that there is a tendency towards the people who are kinder going towards the left, and that can't be bad for us, can it, really, in a generalisation. But the other thing is, I think that as I can dissipate my time watching debates in the House of Commons, I think the majority of young people spend an awful lot of time on social media, whatever it's called, whichever it's called. And my teenage grandchildren are forever with things in their hands, tapping away and laughing and talking and enjoying whatever it is they're doing on these things. And I have no idea, but I do talk to them a little bit about when I get the chance and whether they encourage me about politics and socialism. But of course, it doesn't last very long because their eyes glaze over a little bit and they go back to the things that are in their hands. So I don't get much encouragement on that. They're kind to me, but really they're not awfully interested in what I'm going on about. And I feel that this social media enables people to waste an awful lot of time when in the past they would have been maybe looking towards local activism, maybe looking towards trade union activism, maybe going out about and talking to each other in the streets more than they do now. In the 70s and the 60s, prior to the 60s and the early 70s, there was lots and lots of public meeting places, public speaking places in London. And I, as far as I know, probably the only one that's left now is in Hyde Park. And that's just a noisy forum, really. That doesn't help. It's just a tourist attraction. It doesn't really help for any particularly in-depth debates about anything, I don't think. There's an opportunity to give leaflets out, maybe, if you can avoid the police. But other than that, I don't think there's much use in Hyde Park. And as Paddy says, there isn't any ability to actually get out there and advertise yourself easily, which again doesn't help us in the party because we are small anyway. Let's hope we make a big showing at Glasgow in the next couple of weeks, and the weather's not too wet for you all who are going there. I'll stop at that.
Thanks, Janet. Back to I don't know if you want to comment, Paddy, but if not, back to Matthew.
Yeah, well, I'll just to say one thing quickly about what Janet said. I think, you're right, young people, well, from my experience, spend a lot of time online. My son plays, I didn't see him for several years as he played his computer games. All his friends talk while they're playing games, you know, this sort of thing. I think there's a kind of tendency for, you know, communication has gone online and the activism has sort of gone online as well. And I think there's this tendency to think that if you sign lots of online petitions, you're doing something. Well, you're not really, are you? And that this is what's called clicktivism. And I think that there's a bit of a sort of epidemic of clicktivism where people think, you know, if they sort of like this and they dislike that in Facebook, then this is kind of achieving something. Probably the frustration with this is what's made that breakaway from Extinction Rebellion go and sit in motorways and really piss off people bring some discredit, in fact, to the climate activist movement, unfortunately. So, you know, the sort of things that you actually can physically do are very restricted, and those things that people then sometimes choose to do turn out to be pretty antisocial. So, yeah, there's a bit of a desperate situation all around.
Okay, Matthew, back to you now.
Yeah, sort of just on the topic about social media, sort of stopping discussion. In many ways, it's been the opposite in quite a lot of people, you know, that you've got, like, not sure if any have heard of you, have heard of it. There's a platform called Twitch and, of course, obviously YouTube and stuff. And there have been some figures on that with left-wing views who have been getting quite a large audience, although obviously not enough to make much of a change. Although, unfortunately, there have been a case on the right as well of people spreading ideas, and they've got, for a brief period of time, they were dominating in those areas for the youth and just getting them to take conservative nationalist opinions, which, unfortunately, I can see in my age group as well, with people suddenly turning into major anti-feminists and all that. But it's like, there is a major platform online where a lot of work could be done to get the younger generations in.
Paddy, shall we go on to Freddie now?
Yep.
Freddie?
Yeah, thanks. I would hope you're not expecting a word of wisdom here. I'm just reflecting on what the comrades and guests, whoever, have been saying. And you know, as is sort of normal from the address that Paddy was given, you know, I think we can all largely agree with much of that. It's certainly my optimism, perhaps knows no bounds, because I certainly recall a couple of months back. This is not necessarily a question, more a contribution, I hope. I remember a couple of months back when I was talking on Discord, and we were asking about, one of the things we were talking about was what more activity could we do as a party to propagate the case for socialism better than what we have been doing. And the reason I'm making a contribution just now is, I mean, I still think there's a place for having public meetings in pubs or whatever. I know up till a couple of years ago when we had the former Yorkshire branch, it's something that we still tried to do. And whilst one can describe them as being hugely successful, it did nonetheless give us an opportunity and would get a few people turning up. I remember one in particular in Doncaster, we'll get quite a few people turning up. Well, two in particular in Doncaster, where there must have been about 15, 20 people there. And whilst that's maybe not a huge amount, there was only about three or four of them party members. In fact, I think it was one that Paul Bennett spoke at. I think was my recollection is it was fairly well attended. But the question is really, with this that's coming up in Glasgow in the next couple of weeks or so, we know the party's going to have attendance there, but is anyone? This may well have been done, but has anyone maybe booked a pub or something or a room in one of the halls in Glasgow and advertised the meeting there? The Socialist Party is having a meeting, climate change. Does anyone know if that's on the agenda for the party to do? Thank you.
Paddy, I think you know something about...
Can I answer that, Howard? We're still waiting on the comrades from Glasgow to organise a physical meeting. But you'll see in the standard, in the November standard, that there will be a series of online meetings from the 6th to the 10th, every evening from the 6th to the 10th, to coincide with COP26, there's going to be a meeting. And if you're not able to attend any of the local events which are occurring on the 6th of November, we've got leaflets available via Adam Buick. If you're not going to be able to attend those local meetings, party members could support us by, because I'll be going to Glasgow, party members could support us by supporting the evening meetings that we're hoping to attract people to via the leaflets. We've put a lot of effort into producing specific propaganda for this for that particular few days, so yeah, leave it at that, I think.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, just to come back to Freddie's other point about public meetings in pubs. Absolutely, I definitely think we should start doing that again. I mean, you're right, Freddie. I mean, sometimes these things don't have a lot of success, but I think it's absolutely vital that we go back to doing live meetings. I mean, online meetings are fine in a way, but they're really kind of like the overture, you know. They're not the main performance. It's just not the same thing, you know. And it's great that we've got loads of people going to Friday night meetings online here in Discord. But I think probably most of us would agree that if we could go to a live meeting, you know, if you had a choice between a live meeting in a pub and an online meeting, you know, I think probably most of us would choose the live meeting, unless, you know, there are reasons why you can't, you know, distance or sort of, you know, infirmity or something like that. But, you know, absolutely. I think, we shouldn't just start supposing that, oh, the world's changed now, it's all gone online, that's how it's going to be in future. I think that would be a really bad idea. I mean, sort of actually meeting people is and always has been and remains an absolutely vital part of what we do. It's very difficult to engage with, people that you've never even seen, and people that, you know, visitors who come to us, you know, it's very hard for them to engage with us sort of in an incorporeal way, if I can use that word. Yeah, they need to meet us in person. And we need to have more live events, live things like Firkroft, but perhaps easier to organise up and down the country. This is something that some of us are looking to be doing in the next, you know, in the next few years, just trying to organise a few, you know, little weekends, social weekends, that kind of thing, getting people together in various areas. So I think next May, I think it is, I think there's some plans to organise a bit of a social weekend up in the northeast. See if we can get some of the northeast branch members out, kind of reanimate things around there a little bit. So, you know, we'll be posting news about any of these events that that come up. So, if you can support any of these things, that would be great.
Can I just come back on that, Howard, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. Yeah, listen, Paddy, that sound that, because, again, as I'm sure, I mean, I don't want to be parrot fashion here. I think some of you, I'm sure, will recall that there was this sort of move towards having weekends, etc. I was advocating again, and I'm pleased that that this will hopefully gather a momentum, because I know that certainly the comrades I've speak to in the Yorkshire area, we're looking to try and get something going in Sheffield. We've had a little bit of a setback recently, but we're looking to try and get something going in Sheffield, a public meeting in Sheffield in due course. You better expect a telephone call, Paddy. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Janet, back to you again then.
I'm all in favour of the meeting in person. I think this is wonderful. This Discord has been wonderful for me because I can't travel very well anymore. And so I would always enjoy the online meetings. But as actually getting together person to person is much more interesting, much more a learning situation, I think, because you can chatter and cover different subjects, which we can't do on this forum. I think that the North London branch are doing very well so far in the last couple of months. They've had a couple of outdoor meetings in the North London area, Holloway Road, I think. And they've sold a few bits of literature and spoken to quite a few people, it seems. But they have difficulty because the only place that they can actually get an area to put their table up to display the literature is also available to a lot of other groups, and they get drowned out by hymn singing groups, unfortunately. So they're not doing so very well from that point. But they are trying, and we used to have a table outside of head office quite regularly on a Saturday, almost monthly, I think, and it was noticed by people. I'm not sure how much the local people in Clapham were actually taking the message on board, but it was noticed, and I think that's another little area. An ADM I thought was wonderful for the dual meeting in person and on Discord, although I didn't find the business of hearing people. People don't speak very clearly these days, do they? Not like what they used to when I was young. And so I do feel a little bit hampered by that. Though Carla did mention that she doesn't think that the system there, the speaker system there, is very, very adequate. And maybe we would have to pay out some money and buy a new system. But it was wonderful because we were able to hear people's contributions around the table and in the meeting room. And there was a sense of being together with others, even though we were separated by many miles. Thank you.
Yeah, just to add, I couldn't agree more, Janet. It's not that I'm getting deaf, it's just that people these days mumble a lot.
Okay, Adam Buick?
Well, I'll try and speak clearly. But Janet has said one of the points I was going to make. There are two things which some branches are doing, and that is, you know, one of them is to have these street stalls on a regular basis. I know that they do this in Canterbury, in Kent. They do it in Cardiff, in South Wales, and as Janet has said, they do it in North London, and the South London branch is in fact planning to do the same thing again every year, you know, once a month before their regular branch meetings on a Saturday afternoon. So that is something which you know, can be done. Incidentally, I don't see the disadvantage of other people being there as long as they don't sing hymns through a megaphone. It means that it's a place where other people go, and they know they're going to find people talking about things. So, you know, I mean, outside Brixton Tube Station is in fact better than outside Clapham High Street. But the other thing which some branches are doing is something that Paddy mentioned and had doubts about, and that is contesting elections. This is another way of getting in touch with you know, with people. In fact, as I say, it's one of the, well, as he's pointed out, there are not many other outlets, but this is one. But somehow we can never persuade branches in the north of England to do this. So the only branches which contest this are those in London and Wales and Kent. So I say, you know, these are two things which we can do besides the internet, street stalls, and I would say local elections.
Thanks, Adam. Perhaps with no other questions in the queue at the moment, can I go back briefly to a point made earlier by Janet about the idea that we're likely to get more traction from appealing to the left than the right. At the right, the people are more likely to have the same kind of, for want of a better word, values as us. In my branch, South Wales, we have a member whose famous saying is that the left and the right are two cheeks of the same arse. I've always disagreed with him on that because I prefer the left arse to the right one in this case. And I say that because a lot of what we read from people on the left, not so much talking about people on the Labour Party, but in the Labour Party, but people sort of, if you like, but what you might call further left than the Labour Party, very often you read their analysis of capitalism and it's pretty good. You can agree with most of it. Where, of course, we part company is when they talk about the alternative. They've no real ideas for alternative. They want another alternative within capitalism. We know that and we don't. But nevertheless, their analysis of what's going on in capitalism is often quite similar to ours. And we're more likely to be able to have a meaningful conversation with such people than we are with people who are avowedly, shall we say, right-wing in one form or another. When was it? I think in April, there was a review in the Standard of a book called Principles and Politics of Democratic Socialism. Paddy mentioned earlier that the idea of the word socialism has become very widespread in the States. This was an American book, which was a collection of essays by various people, various academics and other people in the States who call themselves socialist, and they talked about their sort of view of socialism, etc. Frankly, there wasn't a lot in it which, in terms of solutions, in terms of, you know, what we're after, that was that close to us. But there were one or two sort of chinks of light. And anyway, when we, as we usually do, or one member does, sent a copy of this review to the editors of that book, they wrote back and said, very interesting, this is part of an interesting discussion, and we're interested in what you've got to say. Now, okay, maybe they were just being polite. But nevertheless, I think there is a certain amount of common ground here, which, you know, we should, for want of a better word, exploit as much as possible. Paddy, would you sort of agree with that broadly?
I would. I absolutely would. I think that I think historically that we have been in a situation of really tarring everybody with the same brush. You know, if they're not us, they're basically the enemy. I know we never actually say that, and we don't mean that, but it often comes out that way, or you certainly used to. And I really don't think that's helpful, because people that are, you know, on the left are more likely to come our way than people on the right. So, you know, we don't want to be alienating them, really. But also we want to be involved in that debate, you know. So when they are sort of, you know, kicking around these rather silly ideas about nationalisation, you know, we need to be in the room. And I think that if we take too much of a, dare I say, sectarian attitude, we just won't get in the room. So, you know, that's why I kind of asked the question in the first place about, you know, when I was talking about socialism in a sort of general way, by the general understanding of the word, you know, is it becoming more popular? And I think the signs are that it is, and that... In the broadest sense, that is good for us, because that widens the debate. It means people, young people particularly, are starting to listen. We've lost a lot of the kind of historical baggage of the tanky era and the Cold War and all this sort of thing, and young people are not afraid of the terminology of Marxism in the way that they were, you know, a generation or two generations ago. All this is, I think, really in our favour. And plus the other thing that I did sort of allude to but didn't really kind of go into heavily is climate change and what we're going to see, you know, what we're seeing, how we're seeing the debate taking shape within that. And, you know, if we go to Glasgow on the assumption that we're the only people that are saying that capitalism is responsible for climate change, we'd be very, very naive. There are a lot of activists who do think that. What they think the alternative is, that's what we need to be pressing, because they won't have the same idea as us. They won't have thought it through like that. But I think we could certainly press the argument that they think it's capitalism that's the problem. They're absolutely right. It is. They're correct. Now let's talk about what the solution's going to be. You know, and I think one of the problems with, you know, people blaming capitalism is they're not really quite entirely sure what capitalism is. You know, the definition of it isn't very clear. So we know that, because when they propose alternatives like nationalisation, it's pretty obvious that they don't understand that capitalism is, you know, a system of production for profit. They haven't quite nailed the definition. So, you know, we need to be in that debate as well. But the very fact that climate activists, if not anybody else, but climate activists are now politicising in a way that the Green Party don't want them to. And Extinction Rebellion doesn't want them to. They claim that they're beyond politics. Well, they're not. They're beyond the pale, in fact. They don't make any sense, Extinction Rebellion. And I think a lot of activists realise that when you're dealing with the world around you, everything is political. You know, when you're dealing with things that happen in capitalism, everything is political. The climate is political. Species extinction is political. They know that. So I think that we can go up there, and we've already got a lot of common ground with climate activists before we even get started. So I think things are pretty positive, and we've got an opportunity here, as I said, that I you know, we just haven't seen this before. I mean, not in my time in the party, in 40 years. You know, this is probably the biggest opportunity we've seen. And it's bad in a way that it's brought about by a sort of climate crisis, But at least that debate is taking place now. It's starting to be mainstreamed. You're seeing ideas, you're seeing the arguments against capitalism reaching the letters pages of magazines, even science magazines now, in a way that I've not seen before. So I think now is the time when we least want to be downhearted. You know, we've got a huge opportunity here if we can sort of seize it.
Thanks, Paddy. There's nobody else in the speaking queue. To me, that sounded like a really good summing up, actually, if we want to finish now. We've been going for an hour and a half. We normally go on for a bit longer, but we don't have to. Somebody else there, sorry?
Danny. Danny Lambert.
Oh, Danny. Go on, Danny. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, trying to be radical and going to the root of the problem, all societies tend to try and reproduce themselves. And to reproduce capitalism, all you need is a population with very low self-esteem so they can be content being wage slaves. And capitalism does this to people. You can see it all the time in the media, their glorification of celebrities, trying to make the working people feel small. And I think that's our big problem. We've got to get over. We've got to try and convince people that they are worthy of doing this, because what they get in place of self-esteem is ego, and that's what you find you're arguing against all the time. Because because I've done it myself at Speaker's Corner and places like that. You can have the case absolutely pat, and yet on what you're actually up against is a brick wall of ego. They just won't listen when you're telling them, you know, you explain to people about wage slavery and they just won't have it, because they haven't got self-esteem to take it. So the ego just repels it. Well, that's about all I've got to say.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks for that. Paddy, should we draw the meeting to a close then?
It looks like we've kicked this round enough, haven't we?
Yeah. But before we do that, can I perhaps, since Paddy, in the course of your introductory piece, you mentioned the fact that the left currently is in a bit of a void. It's become sidetracked, in particular by identity politics. Can I strongly recommend the article in this month's Socialist Standard on identity politics? Very good article indeed, in the middle page. If people haven't read it, well worth reading. So can I recommend that? Can I also mention before we wrap up that we have an Italian comrade here with us, Giuseppe Ciao Peppe, who has been here before, but only...
Ciao, Moss. Ciao a tutti. Ciao a tutti.
Okay. Right, okay. Well, thanks very much indeed, Paddy. Thanks to Adam, are you on again there?
No, I just want to say something about next week's meeting. There isn't one on the Friday. There's one on Sunday morning for the people in east of us in Asia. It won't be the advertised speaker, but it'll be the advertised subject, or at least an introduction to it. But it's at 10 o'clock on Sunday. But remember that the clocks go back on the Saturday evening. So it's 10 o'clock GMT, not 10 o'clock GMT plus one. But so anyway, that's the next meeting on Discord.
Thanks, Adam. Okay. Well, thanks to everyone who's attended and contributed. Good night, everyone.